Hey, all you jive hustlers, you stone foxes, you mean dudes, watch out.
The Godfather of Harlem is doing it again.
There's only one stud who could rip off New York, ruin Rome, and stay alive to run a number in Africa.
Like stealing candy from a baby.
Super strong, supernatural, and
the baddest cat that ever walked the earth.
Damn, brother, you have become one violent dude.
I might not be the baddest man in the world, but I'm in the top two, and my father is getting old.
Pornography presented by Sam Sugar with the support of Westmont.
His business is pleasure. He sells the soft stuff.
Rated R. It's nasty.
Hello and welcome to Pornography Show 14. In this week's show, I'll be taking a look at the last week according to Fleshbot, provide a cock-on review of a sex aid called the Fleshlight, and talk to amateur adult legend Seska. Now sports. Fleshbot deals with the motivation which underscores all human activity, the need to reproduce. As the biggest blog dedicated to the subject, technically, it's the most important website on the planet. Here's what they dug up this week. As the first mainstream, overtly erotic movies age, we are entering a time when what our parents considered disposable has become revered. This always happens. Shakespeare was written for people with minimal education, Hitchcock's movies were designed to be blockbusters, and Russ Meyer's Vixen, whose remastered trailer Fleshbot found online this week, was as close to porn as he could make it. Compared to Rocco's Nasty Tales 2, currently the third most popular DVD in America, Vixen provides viewers with about as much sexy fun as Rosa Parks' Funeral. That said, Meyer's work is still interesting. The now dated idea that explicit sex could be used as a stalking horse for discussing other issues, stupidly, is fun to see in action. As are women with natural bodies, big tits, and crazy eyebrows, of course. One of Fleshbot's greatest strengths is providing information on sexy websites that weren't produced as part of an FBI sting operation. Softer, spelt without an E because there's nothing like following a trend, is an excellent resource for finding coffee table porn. It's a site designed to please anyone who's ever turned the sound and color down on a porn movie and then been surprised at how much it looks like a video installation. It's hard to look at without asking one obvious question though. How come arty people never spend as much time in the gym as dumb ones? Fleshbot's weirdest find this week was a story by CBS designed to terrify parents over the threat posed by sexy podcasts. It was brilliant. Not only was the piece illustrated with a charmingly dated third-generation iPod, the kind with big red glowing buttons and which you have to use a starter handle to turn on, but it also contained a quote from Jessica Trivizaz, mum. Jessica Trivizaz, who is only 11, has a mum who decided it would be a good idea for her daughter to listen to an episode of Open Source Sex so she could learn right from wrong. Killer idea, mum. I'll bet giving your kids high-quality, sexually explicit material will turn them right off the whole sex thing. If you think sex podcasts are a danger to kids, you should hear the show I did called Make Cool Drinks with Stuff You Find Under the Sink for Disney. In other news, Rob Black announced the release of Jessica Trivizaz All Anal Cream Pie for release on November 1st, 2012. The people who made the movie Pornosaurus Rex are the kind of freaks that make Fleshbot possible. The idea of making a movie which features scenes of hot dinosaur on chick action is funny enough for any group of drunk students to come up with. What blows me away is that anyone would laugh long enough to write a script, shoot, edit, and release a movie. These people either hope for the future, or the reason none of us yet live on the moon and can consume a day's worth of food via a single delicious pill. Regular listeners know how much I love art. Paintings, those metal models, what do they call those? Sculptures, yeah, sculptures, all that shit. It's therefore with some pleasure that I am able to draw your attention to a chance to be associated with the production of a piece of art found by Fleshbot. Philip Mesty is the kind of roll-neck-wearing grant slut that gives art students something to shoot for. He's currently putting together a cubic meter of frozen spunk for a piece he's calling a universal artwork. He's sending out donation kits to wankers who want to be able to shout, "Leave me alone, I'm making art," through the bathroom door, and he needs a ton of the good stuff to fill the refrigerated box he plans to put it all in. I pity his mail carrier. The shame in all this is that he didn't get started on it the afternoon I skipped school back in 10th grade. That was a two-cube afternoon by any measure. They were my favourites this week. For daily updates, check out fleshbot.com daily. One of the advantages to running a successful podcast is getting stuff in the mail. A few times a week I open an email in which someone's asking me for my mailing address because they need to know where to send something they're not going to ask me to pay for. Normally the item they're sending is supposed to make me ejaculate. As I said, advantages of being a podcaster. A lot of the stuff I get isn't worth mentioning, but this week I'm making an exception for the Fleshlight. Saying the word Fleshlight will immediately divide all the people listening into those who are nodding sagely and those waiting for an explanation. For the latter group, the Fleshlight is, that rare species of product, the male masturbation device. While women have a range of advanced technology and fruit designed to tickle their fancy, horny men have to do with their hands or, if they want to win a Darwin Award, two cushions and an orbital sander. The Fleshlight is designed to fill that gap. It's a plastic tube about the size of a small thermos with screw caps on both ends. Inside the can lives an insert made of some advanced soft plastic and designed internally to replicate and improve on the sensations provided by a real organic lady case. The deal is you put the insert into some hot water, slide it into the holder, lube it up and make sweet love to it, just as you would anything else you put your penis in. The question is, does it work and is it worth paying for? At this point, I should add a disclaimer. I'm lucky enough to know a woman who allows me to do things to her that would straighten your hair. She's also beautiful in a way that means the women you lust over on TV, those chicks remind me of her. The only way a guy like me normally gets to be on top of a woman this hot is in the first class cabin on a long-haul flight. In other words, I'm a hard sell. To impress me, this thing has to be good. Opening and operating the unit's easy, the first key difference between a Fleshlight and a woman, of course. It's simple to put together, and with the help of a sink full of water, I quickly had the insert up to slightly hotter than body temperature. I figured it would cool down and wanted to make sure it didn't get cold. Lube comes in the box with the package I received. It was water-based and of a high quality. You can use whichever brand you prefer, but the instructions say lube is essential, unless you're going for that Barbara Bush sensation. Then, the moment of truth. Now, living in LA as long as I have means I'm no stranger to fucking things made entirely out of plastic and incapable of conversation. This was different, though. I hesitated a moment before diving in. Being less than fond of cleaning cum off things, I chose to wear a condom, and despite being only 12 inches long and 5 inches wide, the Fleshlight managed to contain me. How they achieved this compression of space is beyond me. I will be writing to NASA regarding my discovery. The sensation was intense, not like a hand at all, and a lot like a person. In fact, it's easier to describe how it's not like a woman than how it is. Firstly, it's tighter than average. Fleshlights sell a huge range of inserts, but mine was definitely on the small side, and that's a good thing. Secondly, it's deeper. Normally the mechanics of being inside a mouth or vagina limit how far and fast you can enter. The fleshlight's not like that. Being able to manage the depth and speed of penetration to suit your desires is incredibly intense. There's a tidal wave of stimulation. Finally, and thanks to that tidal wave, it's quicker than using your hand. That's because it feels better than a hand, and, unlike sex with a person, you can always give yourself the stimulation you want when you need it. The only downside to the fleshlight I can think of is that if you spend a long time with it, the warming effect of the hot water could wear off. That said, you normally only feel the heat of a body for the first few minutes, and mouths aren't that warm to start with. Overall, the fleshlight is an amazingly simple, surprisingly realistic, and pretty damn good sexual experience. I'm glad I didn't discover it as a teenager. I think I'd still be in my room, back at my parents' house. Overall, well worth checking out.
At a time when a generation needed a spark, the voice of dissension of people apart from mainstream mundane media sharks. But now rap music is the mainstream art, a million miles away from its daydream start. And it's all about a paycheck and fake demographics. Punk ain't in all caps, you don't know what's happening. Let's take you back when rap wasn't fronting. The whole world's listening now, let's tell them something about everyday injustice, violence and corruption. New laws made of silence, ignorance and suffering. Erosion of our freedom in the name of protection. All big brothers watching us, rigging the elections. These crooked execs undermine our economy, stockpiling fortunes or working man's honesty, and are hardly ever held accountable for their crimes. Transferring cash into the name of their wives, while kids in the hood get a 3-to-lifespan for making $50 off of 2 fucking grams. Rockefeller, bitch, I hope you rot in your grave, cause all you ever wanted was jails full of slaves. A workforce with no rights, 2 million strong. Hey, Marvin Gaye, what's going on?
Time to move on, time for change, time is short. People, we don't need a new solution. No more days standing by while our mamas are crying, cause the law ignores the Constitution. No more lies, no deceit. People dying in the streets while our leaders collect contributions. Yo, I'm tired and I'm sick. Got these words on my lips. I've been too well.
About money, drugs, clothes, and hoes. To those who know and educate with pros about the cycle of violence and social woes, we gotta use this music to start refusing to bind to the everyday theme of losing mass confusion. Why should we confuse the masses? We can state points clearly with hip-hop classics. A new religion, new politics, a schism. Breaking apart with hard rhythms, lyrics that invoke thoughts, provoke questions. Rappers who make sense, speak and teach lessons. Yo, the government couldn't stop us, all they could do is sit back and watch us generate profits, not just for lining our pockets, but for waking up a generation that's unconscious. A sleeping giant, a unified hip-hop voice defiant, refusing to accept things non-compliant. And later with Lanta, spitting out our own agenda, giving middle fingers to the propaganda. No more buying in the media anthems while they pander to special interest groups who spread like cancer, searching for weak minds to enter. We can forget the old ways and days of the past, and no voice, no way to say that we mad. No more, we changing the theme with a plan from bling bling to ding ding. Wake up, man, it's a shake up, man, or call it a shakedown, whatever you want, call it. I'm shouting it out now, shouting it out loud, gathering my people, solidarity to make my motherfuckers leave.
Time to move on, time for change, time is short. People, we don't need a new solution. No more days standing by while our mamas are crying, cause the law ignores the Constitution. No more lies, no deceit. People dying in the streets while our leaders collect guns.
Last week I talked to Miss Kitka, who in an earlier show talked to amateur sex site Icon, blogger and burlesque performer Seska. This week I did the same thing. Here's what went down when I talked to Seska.
Hello, Seska.
Hi. Hi, Sam.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
My pleasure.
What is the weather like up there in Montreal?
You know what? I just got up and I haven't even looked out my window. Let me do it. Oh, it's been gray. It's gray and it's been gray.
Really?
We had only a sunny weekend last weekend and that was it. It's been raining and gray.
Well, I'm sorry.
But
you will...
Oh, seasonably warm, so the weather tells me. The weatherman tells me. I don't know. It still seems kind of bitter cold to me.
The weatherman might just be lying through his teeth.
Very likely.
Yeah. You can't trust weathermen.
We have a nice guy. He tends to do all these this zucchini challenge every summer, who has the biggest zucchini in the garden. It's all quite, you know, cute and everything. It's fun, but yes, I go online and I check with Weather Canada, you know.
When you say zucchini competition, we're not living in a world of metaphor here. You do actually mean vegetables.
No, just at the actual zucchini. I think he also did is like how big are your tomatoes.
Ah.
But, you know, it's all, you know, tongue-in-cheek, cute weatherman.
Evening
news stuff.
Those crazy guys. You know, that's got to be the easiest job on TV, because I don't even think they're real meteorologists. They just...
Well, there must be one. The one that they call out whenever there's some big, you know, tornado or...
Stormwatch.
But, yeah, I think, you know, they just smile. They look good in a suit.
Well, at least your guys have weather, because I've lived for years in Los Angeles, and there is no weather. So the weathermen have nothing to report other than sun. And they get very, very excited if it rains. And there's no amount of rain you get in California, for people who don't live in California or Los Angeles, there's no amount of rain you can have in Los Angeles that they don't refer to as a storm. And if it rains 2 days in a row, people say, we're having storms. And you say, no, this isn't a storm. This is just raining. You know, but on the TV, and on the radio, they'll be saying, storm watch, coming at 6. You know?
That's similar to, we have... Montreal and Toronto have, you know, a rivalry, and we can handle snow in Montreal. Toronto, it's only like a 5-hour drive away, but whenever they have a snowstorm, they call in the army. They shut down the city. It's like, what's going on? You know, we slug along. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know what certain cities just can't handle weather, I guess.
They impose martial law. It's just an excuse.
Maybe it's all political...
So you, just to kind of bring people up to speed on the Seska legend, are you a Canadian native? Are you a Montreal native?
Yes, we go way back. My genealogy goes to like the first boat over to, what was it called then? Well, it was French. We were French.
Are you bilingual?
Yes, but I went to English school. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of this Quebecois Anglophone mix. So I speak French with my family, but my French is horrendous. and so I went to, all my schooling was done in English, so I think in English. I dream in French often, though.
Really? Well, that's interesting. That's very interesting, because my father is, his first language is not English. He does exactly the same thing. He speaks, I mean, I don't even speak his native language, but he dreams in his native language and he thinks in English.
I think, you know, it's like some sort of, you know, the way your brain developed, you know, in those first couple of years. And because I only spoke French, you know, or some few little English words in there to age 2 or 3. And then once I went to preschool and, you know, started socializing. I grew up in mostly English area, so.
And
went down.
Well, I think the French thing's cool, and you know, running the kind of websites that you do, there's got to be a huge market, not for French language sex sites, but for French accented sex sites. I think.
Well, they do seem, people where I get the feedback is during live webcam shows. And the best ones where I do speak French is I do them with my friend Talia.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is, she's an immigrant. She's from Chile, so she speaks Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
She speaks French because she, you know, spent her teen years here, and so she went to French school. And then she understands English and speaks just a little bit of English. So it's a multi, you know, language show when we do our, and they just like, ooh, they're speaking French. Ooh. And like we're speaking about really mundane things like, you know, hand the dildo, ooh, I got lube all over my back, or, you know. Or
that's not mundane. That's not mundane, Seska, to regular people.
And yeah, they like the accent. They do.
So tell me, for people who haven't visited seskaforlovers.com or found you otherwise on the web, who is amateur adult lens Seska?
Who am I? Okay. Well, it, you know, you get what you see. It's very much, it's a representation of my real life. Well, there's the Seska Amateur XXX, which is my sex life. And with some opinions and some, you know, sharing of my ideals on sex. And then Seska for Lovers is the softer side of Seska, where I put, like, soft pictures and essays and articles and try to educate a little bit with my website.
So what came first for you? Because I know that you have a life outside the jizzbiz. How did you first find yourself in front of a camera, naked, for someone else's pleasure other than someone you were involved in an intimate relationship with?
It was just a thrill. We started, you know, socializing with Carol Cox out of Montreal.
Okay, who's we?
So my husband and I, we were just dating at the time, living together, James.
Okay.
We found, you know, I was just surfing the web looking for alternative lifestyle links, sites out of Montreal. So it could have been fetish, BDSM, and then swingers.
Why were you looking for that stuff? Was it just for
it's
personal pleasure?
I wanted to expand my horizons, let's say, and so it was more, you know, personal. So then we meet Carol. Carol Cox, who's, you know, got this, you know, long-running amateur site. She's out of Montreal as well. We meet, we socialize. They say, why don't you start a site? You do really well. And I'm like, I don't know. I was teaching at the time. James was working in a marketing research firm. I had a very status quo life. I really safe, but not very exciting. And so we took a chance, and we said, well, let's try this. And we started with us. I was paid by every 3 months on a contract basis. So I took my whole check, and I, you know, bought this one little camera. I can't remember. It's like 1 megapixel. Oh, it's like tiny, tiny, and it was so expensive. Horrible little Fuji little thing. And so we took these photos. We used to take 7 at a time. The card couldn't hold more than that. With a tripod, on a timer, and we'd be taking these sex pictures, take forever, no video at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just grew, and it was, I'm an exhibitionist. I'm not like, I don't like to run down the streets with this, you know, trench coat and flash everyone, but in an adult situation, in a entertainment situation, I definitely love, I'm a ham, I like being on camera, I like being on stage, and so it really was sort of what I think I was meant to do. I really see it. I feel so comfortable in my own skin now.
What were you teaching when you started?
I was working with teenagers who had learning disabilities. And so I would develop, you know, sort of action plans for them and work with other resource people and work with them.
You're probably reaching out to more teenagers with learning disabilities through your website than you ever did in your job.
Well, I'd like to avoid all, you know, connection to. I don't have a problem with young people and porn, but on a commercial level, I have to. You know, I don't answer emails that I get from underage. Just to.
Do you get lots of emails from underage people?
I get some. Underage, not very much, but sometimes it's the young guys who are like, "Oh, I'm hot. This is hot. I'm 17, but when I turn 18, you know, let's get together." And I'm like, delete. And then I do get some advice once, and usually I just send them to a more appropriate place to get sex ed. Like Scarlet Teen.
Yeah.
And that kind of site. So.
Everybody loves the Scarlet Teen. So you made that sound like a very easy transition, but there must have been most people who are curious about sexuality, which is almost everyone, don't feel comfortable, being on camera or starting a website. So, and you mentioned that you're an exhibitionist, but you don't want to kind of run down the street with your boobs showing. So, kind of, what form did that take, and how did you know you're an exhibitionist? And
I turned out to be photogenic. I didn't really ever feel photogenic till we started, taking lots and lots of pictures. And I'm like, I look nice. It looks nice. Okay. And when I like having sex in front of people, I always sort of knew that. I knew that sex work always interested me, but I knew I couldn't be an escort or prostitute. Having sex with a stranger wasn't very interesting to me. It didn't sound, it wasn't safe.
Is prostitution legal in Montreal?
In Canada, the exchange of sex for money is legal. Communicating in public is illegal, is criminal, and there's the pimping laws. So, running a body house,
yes,
is illegal. So, basically you can do it, but I mean it's very difficult to do legally.
That's the same. There's a similar situation in England. Prostitution is actually okay, but anything to do with it is illegal. So you can't advertise, you can't live in a house with another person because they get busted for living off immoral earnings.
Yes, and, exactly.
Yeah, there's all of that. There's a lot of nonsense. But actually trading sex for money, or money for sex, which is how I prefer to do it, is not problematic legally.
So yeah, when I looked, well, there was that I didn't think I could do. And then I was... I couldn't be a stripper. I mean, I do like the idea of the showiness, but I didn't think I could do that as actually go to the clubs and say, hey, I want to dance, and then do the dancing and then the lap dancing. And I'm not really a people person. If I really like you, I love to spend time with you, but if you're boring me, I don't think I could, no matter how much you pay me, I don't think I'd want to do it.
And how would you deal with the rejection as well? Because,
actually, I'm okay with rejection. I do okay with that. I always have. It's like, if you like me, you like me. If you don't, well, I'm not your type. Or, you think, I'm boring. That's okay. I do okay with that. So then I was thinking, well, what I'd love to do is to masturbate in front of a live audience. And then, well, there's nothing like that in Montreal. If there is, it's so underground, I don't know about it. Real great. There's some peep show stuff, but the peep shows are ridiculous. You're actually in the same room with the person. You're just on one side, and they're on the other, and you masturbate in front of them. It's not as theatrical as I would like.
That's not peeping at all. That's just, as you said, that's just having a wank in a room with someone else. Well, but that's overt prostitution, because surely if there's no barrier between you and the person, then there must be sex going on.
Yeah, but there's no contact between the customers, so I guess you.
Well, it depends on how strong those muscles down there are, because frankly, unless the room is 50 or 60 feet across, I couldn't vouch for anyone's safety. I'd probably have to take goggles in just for the safety of the dance.
Theatrical side of things just ended up working out. It's what I ended up doing on the web. The webcams are, a virtual peep show. I get to do exactly what I want, when I want, and people, sit back and enjoy themselves. And it's done safely, for my own security. I do it from home. It's even better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up finding, the technology, the internet, everything happened to suit, and it, fits exactly kind of the way I like to do sex work and the kind of exhibitionist, qualities I have. So it was a good match.
And were you in a relationship when you started working online?
Yes. James and I were together for about 4 years. And we had talked about it before, but we were like, I wish we had started then. It would have been just, fantastic, I think. When there was only like 4 actual websites, personal websites out there, amateur.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have been lovely. but we started in 98. And so we've been together about 4 years. And... you know, like I said, it was a risk we decided to take. He is not an exhibitionist at all, so we decided the focus would be on me, not as a couple site so much. And then it just, it was really good for us because we were working such different hours before in our, you know, regular jobs. We said, let's do this together, and because we love spending time together. We sit in the same office, you know, for 8 hours, and we, you know, ICQ or MSN each other, even though we're on the other side of the room.
Funny.
And we have a really nice time now, spending all our time together, working on
our the romantic side of pornography.
I think there is. I think there can be.
And as someone who's not an exhibitionist himself, how does he feel about you being such, well, a sex object, really?
Oh, about that, no, I guess we don't really see it as, you know, we don't spend all our time worrying about, you know, people's perception of, or objectification of me. I know that it certainly does happen. He doesn't have an issue with it because, you know, we're just really solid, and he doesn't worry about really what other people think about him, because usually it's usually nice things that they think about. Sometimes they don't get it. Like, once we put a whole photo set of just my feet, and because we do a lot of foot fetish. James has a foot fetish, so, you know, it's something that we do in our,
okay,
in our content. And then I get a comment, an email from a member, and he's like, I could tell you were so turned on by that photo shoot. Obviously, he was really turned on by it.
Yeah.
But how could you look at my feet and know what level of sexual arousal? You can tell a thing from it. At least, I mean, it wasn't like those photos, you know, when you're a woman is about to have an orgasm and, you know, her toes might curl or whatever. These are just photos of feet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell whether a woman's turned on if I'm, you know, staring at her vulva. So God knows what it's like just looking at her toes.
Just one body part won't tell you everything, I guess, unless you're, you know...
Yeah, I need to hook a woman up to an EKG to have any idea what's going on through her head. And even then, I can only tell whether one region's active. I have no idea whether she actually wants to talk to me.
You know, people will, you know, see what they want to see, and they project. I really think they, instead of objectify, they project onto me what they want.
Projectify.
Yeah, I think that's what happens more than objectify. They, you know, they see me as a victim. Then I'm a victim. You know, they see me as, you know, this sex pot who's horny 24/7. That's what they're gonna. No matter what I say, I've written about the size of my breasts. I have small breasts. I have no inclination to have an augmentation.
What do you call small?
Small. They're A's.
Okay.
They're A's, and so I was worried I was gonna want that, and I wrote that I might because I saw a lot of girls getting, you know, boob jobs and everything around me. Regular women who were running their, you know, little amateur sites, and they were falling into, you know, the same pattern that the mainstream porn stars do. So they get some success and they get the boobs.
Yeah.
But I was worried about that, and I wrote an essay about it, and then literally, like in capital letters, wrote, "I'm not going to get a boob job." And then, of course, I have a lot of fans who like me for my small breasts, and they were like, "Don't get one, don't get one." I was like, "Do you not read the big? Do you read anything that I write?" Some do, some don't. You know, some just have their own. They just come with whatever they want from me. So, that's what it's very interesting.
And have you found that since you've been active sexually in the public eye, the nature of your intimate relationships has changed? Have you become kinkier, more restrained, more public?
It's been a little bit of a roller coaster. My sex drive changes based on how much work I'm, you know, how much sex work, you know, how much shooting I'm doing. Now I'm doing less, so my sex drive has gone up, actually. I find it's like in my private life, I get a little more excited and interested in having those private moments. It's a little tricky because I have two main partners. I have my husband, who I've been with for 12 years, and now I have a boyfriend of 3 years. So sometimes having both of them, it's not like they both show up, you know, and say, "Hey, we both want to have sex with you," but the relationships are separate. But that's a fair amount of male attention that I have to deal with and negotiate in a way.
Yeah, that's...
Make sure everyone's happy, including myself. So.
So you're
but
polyamorous.
More polyamory than sex, having a porn site. That's more of an issue that way.
Do you know that polyamory actually translates from the Latin as having your cake and eating it too?
It could be.
Yeah. How does that work? For a lot of people, polyamory is a fantasy as long as they are the person who has multiple partners. And I know a few people in relationships like that, and they do, surprisingly, for someone who's not in a relationship like that, I always thought that everyone involved was having multiple partners. But what I've discovered, at least with the people that I know, is that most people who are in polyamorous relationships, there's one person who has a number of sexual partners, and then a kind of number of people who orbit. So does your husband have other partners outside your relationship, or your boyfriend?
Neither of them do at this time. They're totally open, that, you know, that's sort of an arrangement, but they find it difficult to find women who are interested in being like a secondary partner.
Would they be a secondary partner, though? I mean,
use those words. We use the husband and the boyfriend. That to, like, make it nice. And so, my husband was having a nice flirtation with this nice girl, and she knew everything. She knew about me. She met me, and everything was nice. And she had been in open relationships, but more in a dating, you know, nothing too serious. But she didn't think she could be, a girlfriend instead of like someone, a girlfriend with potential of being a wife.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people really are used to that, you know, progression. They think you start off, you know, maybe dating, you get more serious, you get married. That's not a possibility here. And so you have to rethink kind of what a relationship is about. Is the purpose just to get married? To some people, yes, but there's no potential for that. So we found that women, we haven't met a lot of women who not only are they interested in, like my husband or my boyfriend are interested in those ladies, let's call them, and those gals are also open to polyamory. We haven't found the right match for them. Not that we're like looking at the personals or anything, but it hasn't happened.
What do you get out of polyamory?
Well, we didn't expect, James and I, we were thinking just open relationship, sex on the side, good times, no romance, no intimacy with our other partners. And then I just really clicked with my boyfriend. And so I have a really good friendship and an intimacy with a person besides my husband. And I'm able to handle that. I'm able to have, you know, they say, you know, like you're, love is unlimited, and it sounds really corny, but it's kind of like that. Just like how a parent can love more than one child, I'm able to love more than one man.
So if your husband, say, was to get a job 3,000 miles away and want you to go with him, but that would mean leaving your boyfriend behind, what would you do? How do you make those kinds of decisions?
My primary relationship is with my with my husband. So that particular issue, I know that wouldn't come up because we love Montreal. We would never leave it.
Uh-huh.
There's no reason for me to leave. It's more likely that my boyfriend will move to Toronto just because there's more work.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little saddened by that and a little afraid just because I love the way things are. But I also understand that he has other things that he, you know, other goals in his life. And I don't want to have to impose too much on him.
Do you think that
more concern for him?
Do you think that a secondary partner in a polyamorous relationship has to be in some way submissive, because they effectively are submitting to someone else's relationships as an addendum?
Who has a huge amount of power in this, like this little threesome situation, is my husband, because it's his comfort level that is always the one that matters the most. So if he finds I'm spending too much time with my boyfriend, he lets me know, and I have to say, well, I'm, you know, if you're to, you know, keep seeing me, you know, he has to be happy. James has to be happy. So he has the most power. And I'm kind of this weird puppet master, or, I don't know, wedge in the middle, trying to make sure everyone's okay. And then my boyfriend Joe is, you know, just gets what he can get. It's a little difficult.
Yeah.
It sounds really horrible to say it that way. We've worked it out.
Sounds truthful.
Yeah, and so it's really nice. It was difficult the first year. We had a lot of negotiations, a lot of figuring out what everyone was comfortable with. And there's some awkward moments where we'd all three be together, but now all three of us can go socialize together. We don't do anything else. It's not that kind of stuff. Now we go out for supper and things.
And that's also interesting to me because you're someone who says that you like having sex in public.
I love group sex. Love it.
But
love
you sex. Won't have group sex with your husband and your boyfriend.
No, they don't. Well, no, they're just not. They're not interested in that. So
yeah.
That's it. Like James, you know, is a voyeur. So that's why we got involved with the website in a way, because he loves to take photos of me with other people, loves seeing me get off. Totally, you know, that was part of the dynamic, especially at the beginning. It was really a big part of why we were doing it. I love to, you know, it's not bad in a way, but, you know, be having sex with someone and then look up and, you know, make eye contact with James and go, you know, like, look, I'm really getting off. This is so fun. And usually the partner I was with understood this, so it wasn't being rude.
Yeah.
But that was a big part of it. But joining in has never been, we tried some little things, and he's just like, I'm a private person. He's okay with a camera being in the room, but not another human being.
It's a very, very interesting dynamic, and it happens more than I think most people realize, but it's just a very, very interesting situation. Do you think that you'll ever have children?
We weren't planning on having children before we got into the business, and now we're definitely not. I understand a lot of people who do work in porn have, you know, happy families, are able to be parents. But I don't see, I feel like it's just a bit too much to impose onto a child in this current state of the world and cultural, you know, the way the culture is right now about sex, to impose my sex work as, you know, what mommy does or what daddy does.
Yeah.
That's my comfort level. But I understand that other people are okay with it. And you know, some kids, you know, especially, I do know a lot of people who got into the amateur porn biz after their kids were about 10 or 12 years old. You know, they got into swinging and they started launching sites. And so their kids didn't have the really, they had difficult teen years maybe when they're, you know, when it got around what their mom or dad did. But they have a little bit of a tougher shell. It'd be interesting to see what goes on with people who are in the business and stay in the business while raising children. Like, I'd really like to know what's going to happen with Asia Carrera. She's so open about everything.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting one. I was speaking to her not so long ago, and she has she has a very interesting outlook on the whole shebang anyway. But we are living in a time when the first intergenerational porn dynasties have emerged. There are a number of kids who are now working in porn whose parents worked in porn in the 70s and early 80s, which is interesting. And I actually have a personal fear that, like the Rolling Stones, some people will never retire. And I do wonder if in 20 years' time, there are going to be a number of adult websites that feature, you know, people who are pensioners. Not that pensioners aren't, well, actually, pensioners aren't sexy. Not that pensioners shouldn't be allowed to take their clothes off. But I personally don't really want to see that.
Well, that's one thing that I've been trying to figure out. When will I stop being in front of the camera? And I don't necessarily want to be a senior citizen.
Yeah.
I know there's a couple of, you know, sites with some swingers who are in their 50s who, you know, look quite good, you know. But they've had, you know, augmentations and tucks and things, and I don't want to do any of that.
Yeah.
So, right now I'm 34. I'm giving myself till 40, since I do look younger than 34. So that's kind of in my, you know, benefit. I probably will do maybe the sexy... I'd actually love to continue doing webcams, probably. I love the webcams. And so, and it's very forgiving.
Yeah, the pixelation. As things get higher and higher definition, actually, the standards, the bars are going to be raised. Because it's brutal. I mean, even a high-def camcorder up close is a lot tougher than a traditional camcorder. But yeah, the gorgeous soft pixelation of a crappy Logitech quick cam is very, very friendly to the old amateur porn.
Yeah, so I'll probably, you know, keep doing some form of that. I'll definitely want to always, I like journaling. I'm okay with that. That's good. And probably just putting up Canon pics. I'll probably just, I've already slowed down a little bit as, but that's less, not always, it's not totally my choice. There's just a lot less people to work with in Montreal. Now there's like only like two or three, while there used to be like 20.
Why has that happened? What's happened to Montreal?
People expected to make a lot of money and fast, and, you know, it was just overly, the market was saturated, oversaturated. There was just so many people who just created websites and thought, you know, I'll make $1 million.
It's an enormous amount of prejudice in the adult space, because what I notice repeatedly is that people look at porn, they look at the people involved, and they make the first assumption, which is these people are stupid. And then they look at how much money's being made, and they say, hang on, these people are stupid and they're making millions of dollars. Therefore, someone as smart as myself, it's just going to be a cakewalk.
Or they think, oh, this girl, you know, who's, you know, 150 pounds or 170 pounds, because there's some girls who, you know, have made decent livings who are not, you know, the chubbier girls.
Yeah.
Or the older girls, and they think, oh, well, I'm gorgeous.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of those girls.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait 10 minutes, there's a new one that's going to come through the door.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, you definitely need more than a hot booty. And the best example of that, I mean, because the amateur world works like the mainstream world, which I'm considerably more familiar with. But you look at, you know, the world's most famous porn star, Jenna Jameson. Even Jenna would say she's not the best looking woman who's ever worked in the adult industry. And if you look at some of her photographs, she does look spectacular in a lot of photographs. But if you look at the work that goes into them and you look at who she is, the reason that Jenna Jameson is Jenna Jameson is not because she's some spectacular beauty. It's because of the way that she's, you know, worked her career and what she's brought to the table. And in the amateur realm as well.
You need some personality.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be like, some people are so quiet, you know, they're like so timid, but they're cute. Oh, or they'll have maybe some crazy sex and, you know, do all sorts of cream pies or, you know, biracial, you know.
Hey, that's not...
Bangs.
That's
not enough, you know, just because you have do the stuff that's, you know, considered wild. You have to have a little more than just circus tricks or beautiful face. You have to have the package, I think.
And I've got to say, you mentioned something that's actually one of my pet things, because I'm particularly, you know, I'm big lefty hippie. But there are certain things that count as fetishes that shouldn't be.
Oh, ethnicities, would you say?
Yeah. I've been
talking about that with Heather Corinna for years.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing kinky about interracial sex. It's not as if people have different genitals. So the way that people sell interracial sex, you would think it was about fucking a crocodile or like Aquaman. You know, as if people's genitals were going to be different. And I know guys who obsess over, I want to have an Asian girlfriend. And you think...
Yes, the Asian fetish. How a person.
Yeah, and you think, really, what do you think? Do you think, you know, Slick 50 comes out of her vagina? Or that, you know, she's going to kind of bend backwards like some praying mantis and, you know, expand like a flower? It's... We're all the same. So...
It drives me nuts. My thing, part of it is a fetish is a body part or an object, not a whole person.
Yeah.
And so I hate that they use it all over the place. I prefer niche, you know, in a marketing term, like to say, well, this is a niche market, you know. But even so, to obsess about, no.
The really interesting thing is when you look, I've worked with some video producers, and you look at where certain niches of porn sell the most. And the places that are really, really into interracial porn are the same places where they have the Klan meetings. The more racist the populace, in general terms, the more they fetishize, you know, the naughtiness of having
and
sex with someone.
Stereotypes,
yeah,
suppose.
Exactly.
Like,
where, yeah, they
you
they
know, the
Mandingo.
I'm like a whore.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the savage. I mean, the one of the it's not often talked about because normal people don't really analyze porn. But you know, Behind the Green Door, one of the seminal porn films, has this enormous kind of racial subtext. And interestingly enough, and I believe I'm the first person to have made this connection, but Behind the Green Door is kind of the same period, time period, production-wise, as the James Bond movie, Live and Let Die. And Live and Let Die is the one which has got all the stuff in New Orleans with all the kind of black baddies. And there is a scene in that where Jane Seymour is tied to a post, and a black guy who's got hardly any clothes on dances towards her holding a snake.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and you watch that and you think, what's this actually about? You know, could it have anything to do with, you know, stereotypical fears of black men's virility? And it's a fascinating area for me to think about as well, because I've also, you know, the myth about black guys having enormous cocks was started by organizations like the Klan, because they wanted to be able to stop, or they wanted to make people fear, you know, groups of people they didn't like. There's enormous debate about, you know, penis size and how it relates to body size and whether people actually have bigger wangers or not. But it's just, it's really interesting to me to see it fetishized, because it's just, it's so odd to fetishize an entire person. I mean, you don't think of blonde as a fetish, you know, or even, you know, kind of body hair as a fetish. And that's really become a big thing recently, too.
Oh, yes. Well, I have a, for my pubic hair, I've never been fully shaved. I've always kept some on top. And then I have a triangle. And then I had written in one of my form questions for my members, I was like, should I shave it off or keep it? And they were like, no, keep it, because when you're in a group scene, we can always find you because you're the only one with hair. And now it's very, I've got the pretty, we have a large audience for the webcam shows, and I've been kind of growing it out a little, not, but, you know, but there, everyone is like, oh, it's so refreshing to see.
Yeah.
And I'm still have the triangle, the labia is completely shaved, but on my mouth, I have my triangle, but now I'm letting it grow a little bit. And so people are just like, wow, yeah, I think we'll see it in mainstream porn too. Not necessarily full bush or anything like that, but I think we're going to see more and more a little return to the natural, more natural.
One of my...
The girls who can grow it back anyway.
Yeah.
You wax so much.
Yeah, it's probably, they'll probably have some kind of funky dread that just appears.
Well, like in Japan, they put those little, there's a special word for it, but they put the fake ones.
Merkin?
Yes. Maybe people will be using merkins.
That I can see merkins coming back. One of my favorite models in the world is a woman called Kyla Cole, and she's always had pubic hair, and it doesn't seem to have affected her career at all. But it does seem to be increasingly unfashionable. And the other thing about people removing their pubic hair is that not everyone's genitals are actually good to look at.
Well, you need some shaping. I didn't like mine. I mean, I not the laziest vine and everything. I just found it was just like, I don't know. I think it looks good with a little hair on top. Same with guys. Oh, I hate guys who shave it all off.
I had this discussion with Nikki Fritz and in an interview. I think it was like the second or third show, if anyone wants to go back and hear that. And she was talking about the fact that she dated Johnny Depp before he was famous, and that he was the first guy she ever met who shaved his junk, which I thought was a huge coup that should have got me on Entertainment Tonight, but it didn't. But Johnny Depp Johnny Depp shaves his balls. This is what I discovered. But I don't even know how guys do that. I had this discussion with Nikki, and she actually very kindly offered to show me how to shave my balls. But after some further discussion, we discovered she didn't actually have the upper body strength needed to handle me in that area. But I don't see how you can... To me, it would be like shaving a walnut. You know, I mean, it just seems incredibly dangerous.
You know what? I must have... I think I've shaved James once for a photo shoot.
My God, that's trust.
It was okay to do that. He shaves for our webcam shows, but he keeps the... Again, he keeps a little on top. Sometimes too much for the viewers. They go, ooh, he's hairy. But, you know, it's because you're putting the camera right up at your...
Yeah, yeah.
Everything looks bigger.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting that the viewers admit to looking at your husband's junk, because no, I'm assuming most of your viewers are men.
Most of them are men. He does have a few fans, some bi men. He's not bi, but he's like, sure, if you get off, whatever. He doesn't care. But, you know, if it's a, you know, close-up blowjob scene, then, you know.
That's true.
They're going to see, you know, some pubic hair of his.
And speaking of close-up blowjob scenes, what actually, because you did mention before that you don't really have a foot fetish, but what does float your boat? What are,
oh,
when
I,
someone...
I do have a foot fetish. I developed one. James has one when we first got together. And then first I thought, well, that's kind of weird. Don't you like the rest of me? What about the rest of me? Mm-hmm. Which is, I think is a very common reaction. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, oh, no, he likes my feet. He likes my feet especially. So I thought that was nice. And so now I, when I'm about to orgasm, I like to actually shove my foot into my partner's mouth, which I only do with my husband because no one else really gets it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, but now I, that's something I like a lot. Other things that I love, bath, water, swim, skinny dipping, that stuff, that's more a sensual thing, but of course sensuality can play, you know, plays a whole, it's a whole big part of sexuality, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a bit of a voyeur in me, so while I am an exhibitionist, I do like, I don't necessarily like watching a whole lot of porn, but seeing something in the flesh, you know, if you go to fetish night, there's going to be some interesting things to look at, and that can be arousing.
Mm. Well, thank you so much. It's been fascinating to talk to you, and I have learnt a lot. Do you have anything that people should be particularly aware of? And I know that you have more than one website, so where should people find you?
Well, I have, well, there's Seska.com, which is my amateur XX site, and then I have SeskaForLovers.com, which is a smaller free site, but I archive all the material in my members area at Seska.com. And so you'll find photos, videos, and journal entries, and live webcams at my personal site, and then my blog, my journal, depending on what I feel like calling it that day, some softer photo sets, and some of the stuff that's more geared towards heterosexual women, gay men, I suppose, since I have some single guy photo shoots that I've shot, essays and articles. At Seska for Lunch. Yeah. So those are the two things. And then if they just want, if they're ever in Montreal, I have a neo-burlesque troupe, and we do lots of goofy things. So if you're ever in Montreal.
And what's the name of the neo-burlesque troupe?
Oh, the Coralies. But the website is coralies.com. Coralees.
And do you have anything coming up? Because I think, didn't you mention to me that you
have... Yes, well, I'm going, this is a special show. I'm going to Toronto to work with the Scandals. They are doing a fantastic multimedia musical theater piece about how culture, the arts, take from whores and get respect by producing songs, literature, art, but uh-huh. The whores never get the respect. So they have this great production. And I'm going to be doing a live webcam performance. A la a Wizard of Oz. I'll be behind a curtain and you won't know where I am, but I'll be in the room, somewhere in the room, and you can go to and watch a webcam film performance.
Wow.
It's like a virtual peep show. But it's, and it's really hot because there's a lot of lesbians who come out to these, to burlesque shows, and they've never really had women perform for them. So
uh-huh.
I love doing the show for them. It's fantastic. But it's definitely a show for anyone who's interested in horse.
lesbians get so much play. I want to come back as a lesbian because lesbians just, you know, women love women more than they love men in every way. It's just not fair. But, well, I will put links to all of that stuff up on the pornography.com
website.
Well,
thank you. And, great talking to you, Sam.
That's it for Podnography 14. Thanks for listening, and be sure to check out podnography.com for links to the items mentioned this week. My name's Sam Sugar. That was Podnography.